Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
And a very warm welcome back to Solidarity Breakfast.
A left response to the major developments in capitalism.
What they trade in is not wheat. They trade in famine.
A little dose of revolutionary optimism.
I think it's really important to sort of express solidarity globally.
It really is a deal by corporations for corporations.
The union forever defending our rights. Down with the black leg.
If you think the ABC's left wing, don't listen to this program.
Solidarity Breakfast, 7:30 to 9 a.m. Saturdays, 3CR, 8:55 a.m. Streaming and 3CR digital, podcast or audio on demand. And of course, the website, solidaritybreakfast.org.au.
Solidarity forever!
Good morning, listeners out there. This is Annie and g'day, Tobiah. How are you?
Good morning.
On this fine morning, this Solidarity Breakfast morning with the moon lying on its back, a little slither.
It's quite chilly out there.
Yeah, it is. 13 degrees. We're coming towards the end of the warm and balmy, perhaps. Mm. Unbelievable. There's been some significant things happening around the traps. We'll kick off with the Human Rights Law Centre put out a release that the Albanese government is set to abandon thousands with Australian visas in conflict zones. It says that as Parliament is poised to pass new laws giving the Minister for Home Affairs the power to prevent temporary visa holders from entering the country, the Migration Amendment 2026 Measures Number 1 Act 2026 aims to stop people from places including Iran and Lebanon from travelling to Australia to take shelter from war. The new law could immediately affect up to 61,000 people in the Middle East region who already hold valid visas to travel to Australia or who may already be in transit. The Department of Home Affairs has confirmed that 7,200 Iranian people are likely to be the first to have their visas ceased under the new powers. The minister has the power to extend the six-month entry bans indefinitely. The new laws represent a further dismantling of Australia's refugee protection program, with boat turnbacks and mandatory offshore detention already making it near impossible for people to travel to Australia to seek safety. The Albanese government is effectively preventing nearly 10,000 people from Iran and Lebanon from entering Australia at the same time that Australia commits military personnel and assets to the Middle East.
Yeah, this coming in light of US and Israeli airstrikes pounding Iran for the 14th day. It's now 2 weeks since the initial bombing started with the, must be reminded, the bombing of an all-girls school.
Killing, we're talking about primary school children here.
Yeah, killing over 160 primary school students that were just going to school and the staff members involved in what is called a double tap strike. So they waited 40 minutes before the initial hit, and then they hit the first responders as well 40 minutes later.
And if you didn't catch it on the ABC, the 7:30 report, they were talking to the Israeli ambassador to Australia, and they were asking him what he was talking, what this was all about. And they said, "Oh, you know, with in Iran, you just can't tell. They're just not transparent." And therefore, it's okay. We can drop bombs on primary schools.
Exactly right. And this is reading from Dropside. A series of heavy airstrikes hit areas in and around Tehran on Friday, and blasts were heard in several neighborhoods. One strike hit near a large rally in the capital, where thousands gathered for the annual Jerusalem Day or Quds Day demonstration, a state-organized rally in support of Palestinians. The rally took place despite the Israeli military issuing an earlier warning on its Farsi language Twitter account for people to evacuate. The airstrike hit the area of Ferdowsky Square, just down the street from the heart of the rally. Iran's state-owned press TV reported that shrapnel killed one person, and top government officials attended the demonstration, including the head of Iran's Supreme National Security Council and the head of the country's judiciary. At this count, there's at least 1,500 people have been killed and almost 20,000 people injured in the US-Israeli attacks on Iran since the war began on February the 28th.
And I'll have to say that it's quite clear that many people don't actually support this war. It was reported that a recent survey in America has shown that the general population, there was only 34% of people that were surveyed have support this war. This is put into the context of the public support of the Afghanistan war, which is, you know, equally weird. But that was at 90%, while the attack on Iraq was 70%. So this is, if you look at the concept of one third, two thirds, we're talking about an imbalance of support that should actually cause rifts in the American society. On that same note, last night I was actually quite appalled by a news report on the ABC News that quite clearly is a report to shore up support for this US-Israeli war on Iran, appalling use of the death of Nepalese guest workers in the UAE from Iranian missiles to beat a drum of support for the US-Israeli war on Iran. Appalling because these are the same outlets, media outlets and countries that assiduously ignored the death rate amongst Nepalese workers on the FIFA World Cup stadiums when workers were dying of dehydration. I just find it, the double standards, appalling, absolutely. And they're quite clearly massaging emotional feedback from the Australian population to be anti-Iranian, when in actual fact this is an illegal war.
Yeah, that's been the whole push with this, you know, save the FIFA, save the soccer players, and then they, you know, took five Tony Burks there, you know, taking nice photos. They leave the rest of the team to go back if they were so concerned. But speaking of double standards, the US temporarily lifts sanctions on Russian oil already at sea. The Trump administration announced on Thursday that it will temporarily allow shipments of Russian oil already at sea to reach global buyers as part of its efforts to stabilize surging energy prices. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said that the exemption in place until April 11th could see roughly 130 million barrels go into the market and help curb the soaring prices of Brent crude. And German Chancellor Friedrich Merz on Friday criticized the US decisions to ease sanctions on Russian oil, saying that six members of the G7 expressed a very clear view that this is not the right signal to send, Merz. So the capitalist class is at war more than ever.
Oh, there you go. You might have caught up with the fact that two activists, a man and a woman, were arrested for using the phrase "from the river to the sea" at a rally outside Queensland's parliament on Wednesday as they protested against new laws that are being put in place. Two phrases are now considered to be jailable. One of them is "from the river to the sea" and the other is "intifada."
Globalising.
Intifada. And with a potential 2-year jail term being attached, which is just a bizarre concept when you think about the practicalities of keeping thousands of people in jail for saying two phrases potentially. It was a pretty extraordinary display from the Queensland Police, said Greens MP Michael Berkman, who was a witness at the rally. I think the arrest yesterday has all the hallmarks of an authoritarian police state, and the police there were clearly all too happy to act as the thought police on behalf of the LNP state government. The Students for Palestine Queensland held a press conference on Friday morning regarding this. William Sims from the group, University of Queensland Union Ethnocultural Officer, said there were more cops at the rally than I've ever seen at a student protest. There were riot cops. They came ready to arrest people. We won't be lectured on hate and racism from the Liberal Party, who have spent years whipping up racism towards my people, Indigenous people, and towards Muslims and refugees. Ella Guthridge said the arrests show the intention of the Lords is clear: to silence opposition to our government's foreign policy. They want to silence criticism at the same time as our government is supporting Trump's illegal war in the Middle East. But on a positive note, you may not know this because I just picked it up last night, kneecap rapper Liam O'Hahn, I don't even know how to say it, better known as Mo Chara, spoke out after it was confirmed he will not face a new terror trial after judges at the High Court in England rejected a Crown Prosecution Service's appeal against the decision to throw out the case, which is bloody good. It's funny, you know, I can't say his erst name, but in my history, one of my relatives came to Australia in probably during the famine, and the only language she could speak at that time was Erse, which I found fascinating. She had to learn English once she arrived here. Anyway, by the by. There's other things that have turned up quite... on the same subject, there was a fairly terrible attack by a right-winger in Ballarat at the end of at the Ramadan final. They have a big celebration, and it's called an iftar. Yeah, and shocking. There was anyway, you know, this person was really aggressive and was having a go at the people, making the kids cry, and people were feeling incredibly threatened by this person. They were pretty underwhelmed by the response by the police when they went to talk to them about it.
Yeah, the ABC reports that as Federal Home Minister Tony Burke says, he will speak with the Australian Federal Police about an alleged attack on a Muslim iftar dinner in Ballarat. Community leaders say that they are disappointed by the response from authorities so far after their community gathering was gatecrashed by a man who declared himself right-wing and allegedly started punching guests, shouting racial death threats and intimidating children. The ABC spoke with the victims of the attack, who said they were traumatised and worried about a new age of Islamophobia. He said police, Mr. Burke condemned the man's behaviour and said police would continue to look into the incident. People saying, quote, people who go in to shout abuse at people and intimidate people and use dehumanising language against people for observing their faith, don't pretend you're patriotic. Pretty light words, we could say, considering the violence of the event.
2 years for a slogan?
Yeah.
In Queensland?
Yeah. And some harsh words, maybe, for someone who actively went in and abused congregation members.
We've only got a few minutes to continue with our headlines because there's so many, but you might notice that the Tenants Victoria have put out shocking new research has exposed the reality of racial discrimination in Victoria's rental market, with 69% of those surveyed reporting direct experiences of racism when they were trying to secure housing. The study, conducted by a team of University of Melbourne researchers in partnership with Tenants Victoria, reveals that renters face discrimination, especially when applying for a rental. Some 61% of respondents denied housing or treated less favourably due to their racial or ethnic background, with significant harms associated with these experiences. When a mother and her children are driving around homeless for 2 months because agents won't even return her calls, we have a system in crisis. The research found that most discrimination came from estate agents and property managers, 60% in this sample, with participants reporting being told to go back to your own country, being rejected based solely on their names, and being selectively denied entry during an inspection. What bad people. Incredibly bad. It's so bad. But on the other hand, RAFU went to the short-term there was a conference of short-term lease holders, like B&B people, you know. And it was recent. It was held recently. I've just got to find it. Must be on the other side of this. Because it relates to the same thing. NAM, this week on March the 11th and 12th, Strive 2026 Australia will be holding a... They held a conference in NAM. This conference celebrates, promotes and helps support the greed and blatant gouging that the short-term rental industry participates in and supports, according to AFU. The conference has no interest in the provision of housing as a human right. Instead, its only interest is in using homes to line pockets and for the greedy. With workshops like turning a good STR, short-term rentals business, into a scalable, valuable asset. Disgustingly, the conference discusses the use of AI to run Airbnb portfolios, an inhuman travesty using primitive and reasonably less language models to decide to get housing, and who doesn't should never be thought that even crosses the human mind, yet it's the forefront of this conference. In NAM alone, there are 24,000 Airbnb listed for rent. Of these, 72.4% or 17,389 are considered to be whole houses or apartments. This means that there are 17,389 less houses available for Melbournians to actually live in. 30,660 Victorians are without a home at the last census, and 65,000 Victorians are still waiting for public housing. It goes on to talk about the experience of places in the country where in some areas locals are completely... thrown out of the housing market because all houses are available only for short-term lease because, of course, their locations are the sort of locations that people want to take holidays in.
Yeah, there's a map of the amount of Airbnb locations that are listed. Currently, you could look wherever you'd like. I'll try find it to put it in the show notes. But it is... incredibly telling of especially coastal areas where people are. There's no hope if you actually live and work in that town.
Yep, no way. And RAFU is calling for regulation. Victoria, believe it or not, has no proper regulation of short-term stays, and it's actually becoming a major problem, or it is a major problem.
Is that RAHU, yeah?
Yeah, RAHU. Yeah. That's a renters and...
housing union.
And you can find out more of about what the campaign is by going on online. And just before we leave, it's the findings of the National Anti-Corruption Commission's robo-debt investigation will be devastating to victims and their loved ones, according to ACOS. The NACC found two public servants engaged in inverted commas, serious corrupt conduct, but will not refer them for criminal prosecution. Four others, including former Prime Minister Scott Morrison and former Secretary Catherine Campbell, were found to not have engaged in corrupt conduct. Of course, the Boswellers get their minions to do what they say, off with their head. Off with their head. And of course...
No one gets charged.
Nobody gets charged. And people died, blood on their hands. You're on Solidarity Breakfast with Annie and Tobiah. And we're going to go to the student strike for Palestine. Anila, our co-host, who's a bit unwell, but she did stellar work. She went to the student strike for Palestine on Wednesday. And this is her report.
So who am I here with?
Hi, you're with Goya.
Phoebe.
Mishire.
And where did you guys come from and how old are you?
So I'm 19 years old. I come from Bali and I'm a student of Monash University.
I'm a Monash student as well. I'm from Melbourne and I'm 19.
I'm a Bangladeshi exchange student from Malaysia. I'm 20 years old.
So why did you guys leave class today?
To protest for Palestine, to free Palestine. So the world knows that Palestine needs to be free. It's their right.
Because the genocide that is happening in the Gaza Strip is unacceptable and it shouldn't continue.
Well, because, you know, striking, for human rights is a lot important than attending these classes. There are people that are dying in the hundreds, innocent children, innocent mothers, innocent fathers, brothers, sisters, who are dying as we speak right now. So as someone that is privileged to be studying in Monash University, I believe it is our responsibility to represent human rights for the people of Palestine and of the people of the world.
I'm Annika. I'm a student at RMIT. I'm in the Socialist Club and in RMIT Students for Palestine. I came to the strike today because RMIT has a bunch of different weapons ties with companies like BAE and Boeing and Lockheed Martin, who are contributing to the genocide in Gaza right now, as well as RMIT has a partnership with the US Department of Defense. I just think it's totally abysmal that our universities have ties to the US government and to these weapons companies that are slaughtering people all over the Middle East. And I just think that we have to come out and protest against it.
I'm Kit from Melbourne Girls College and I'm 17.
I'm Rodessa from Hunting Tower School. I'm also 17.
So why did you guys leave class today?
I think this issue is really important because I don't see why we should ignore the education of so many people that's being prevented and blocked by a madman's war. And just, we need to think beyond ourselves.
I think it's just like insane how absolutely inhumane and depraved our world is becoming. And I think that's obviously like a massive result of capitalism. And I think, you know, the Palestine issue is so emblematic of that. And, you know, Israel's power is essentially like this like beacon of Western imperialism in the Middle East. And it just really shows that like our entire world system is not willing to forego that, even, you know, for the lives of like over 100,000 people, and obviously extending to like Lebanon and, you know, all of these countries in the Middle East, which are now just being absolutely ravaged by this like imperialist war machine. It's just absolutely disgusting. And I think, how can we not stand up against this?
I'm a 15-year-old from Footscray High School.
And why did you leave class today?
Because I wanted to support Palestine in the war, because what's happening is not right. And they're using lots of bad things, and it's just not a good thing to be happening on people. Yeah.
That was great. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
Free Palestine.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So I'm here with
Nick, Rahul.
And where are you guys from?
From Monash.
Yeah, we're both actually from Monash, coincidentally, yeah.
I'm from Monash too. So why did you guys leave class today?
Well, I think particularly with the latest round of bombing on Iran, it shows that the US and Israeli war on the Middle East is not going to be confined just to Gaza. So I just think it's urgent to try to build an anti-war movement that can put a stop to our government's support of that.
Yeah, as you see, we're letting war criminals into our country and we're not really taking a stand against it. So it's clear that the Australian government themselves are not going to stand. So I think it's our job as the citizens to hold democracy accountable and to actually step forward and call out this inane genocide for what it is.
How do you feel about the Australian government announcing that Australian troops have been deployed in Iran today?
It's absolutely outrageous. Like, Albanese takes every effort to try to do everything he can to support this war effort. First, cheering it on, like being one of the first world leaders to announce his support for the bombing of Iran. But yeah, now contributing troops in submarines and aircraft to it. I think we should have absolutely no part to play in this. More than that, we should close down institutions like Pine Gap so that we're not contributing intelligence to help the long-range bombing of Iran and mostly citizens, hospitals, schools, etc.
Yeah, there's both two sides to it. First of all, we should not be participating in a genocide whatsoever. We should not be participating through ignorance and through lack of action either. So not only should we not be contributing to the death of millions of people in the Middle East, we also should not be contributing the death of Australians who should not be fighting in a war at all whatsoever.
Thanks very much. So who am I here with today?
Dejara Curry.
How old are you?
I'm 14 from Preston High.
I'm Badali Curry, I'm Dejara's brother, and I'm also 14 from Preston High.
Hi, my name's Ahmed Maliki bin Ahmed Munawar, and I'm 14 and I'm from Preston High.
So why did you guys come out today?
Well, I was looking around on Instagram and stuff, and I also saw a bunch of flyers about it, and I definitely feel like it's something I'd want to be involved in.
Yeah, my brother introduced the idea to me, and because I can't really do anything myself individually, but coming along to show support, it's just one person not doing it isn't much, but when a lot of people come, it's our combined efforts that really makes a difference.
because first of all, I'm Muslim, and obviously Palestinians are Muslim too, so it kind of unites us all. And I really sympathize with Palestine, as they're going through a really bad time for a really long time.
That was great, guys. Thank you so much.
Great to see so many people out here today. Today's the ABC interviewed a human rights expert. And that human rights expert said, according to all legal definitions, Australia is now at war.
Shame.
America and Israel have launched an all-out assault on the Middle East. This is a new Iraq.
Shame.
10,000 civilian sites across Iran have been bombed. Schools, homes, hospitals. Shame.
Shame.
Israel has again invaded Lebanon. Over 500,000 people have been forced to evacuate. That is over 10% of their entire population.
Shame.
Meanwhile, we know that the Gaza genocide continues. Israel is occupying over 50% of the Gaza Strip. They have annexed the West Bank. Shame!
Shame.
These are not far away wars. As I said just before, our government has now, they are at war.
Shame.
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 If people don't know, it's not just rhetorical support being given by our government. It's also the fact that we host a US spy base called Pine Gap.
Shame.
This spy base gives America and Israel every bit of intelligence it needs to bomb civilian targets, to assassinate leaders. Shame!
Shame!
As students, we have a responsibility to stand against the war and the terror that not just Israel, not just America, but also our government is actively facilitating. So that's why we're out here today! We demand that the Gaza genocide stop immediately, that the occupation of the West Bank cease immediately, but that the war and the terror that Israel, America, and our government are raining on the Middle East stop immediately.
Yeah.
We also demand that our government end all military ties with America. Close down Pine Gap. Expel all U.S. soldiers. End all military complicity. And of course, always and forever, free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free, free Palestine.
Free, free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free Palestine.
Free, free, free Palestine.
Free, free, free Palestine.
Alexander College and a national co-convener of high school students for Palestine. I wanted to continue with what Bella said. It's clear what side our government is on. Those who commit genocide run our world, while those who fight back are attacked. So first I wanted to say, good on everyone for getting out here today! Our movement is being slandered, but we know we won't be cowed. It is incredible to see so many people standing here and continuing to fight for a free Palestine and for an end on the war on Iran.
Woo, woo.
The first speaker I want to introduce is Sam Lincoln, a Students for Palestine activist and socialist at Monash University, who was involved with organizing the student encampments and the student strikes, just like the ones we're having here today. Welcome, Sam.
One, we are the students. Two, we won't be silent. Three, stop the bombing now, 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 now. One,
we are the students.
Two,
we won't be silent. won't be silent.
Three.
Stop the bombing now, 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 now.
We are the students of the Palestine movement. We're the people that are supposed to be inheriting this world, and look at what they're handing us. They're handing us a world of rubble, of war, of genocide. Shame!
Shame!
The US and Israel together are slaughtering the people of Iran, of Lebanon, and of Palestine. Why? So that they can make their fat pockets even heavier. Shame!
Shame!
The people at the top, the total sickos that run this system, they're not even pretending anymore that they care about peace and equality. More and more, they're ruling with brutal honesty and brutal honesty of how they run this system. This is mask off capitalism. Shame.
Shame.
And today, Iran has become the trademark of their wars. The billionaires who wake up and say, fuck you, I will bomb and terrorize whoever I want if it means they get to expand their empire and secure more profits. Shame!
Shame!
Unlike the Donald Trumps and Anthony Albanese's of the world, ordinary people, students, workers, everyone at this rally here today look at these attacks and think that they're psychotic. I think this shows that we deserve to run this world way more than our so-called leaders do. The destruction in Gaza is the blueprint of this new violent world order. For 2.5 years, we've watched children starve, we've watched entire cities be flattened to the ground, and entire families be wiped from existence. Shame!
Shame!
And every so-called international institution, every so-called democratic government has let it happen. Shame.
Shame!
As students, we have to ask, what role does my university play in all of this? All across the country, they've tried to expel Palestine activists, they've harassed us and teared down our encampments. Shame.
Shame!
They say we threaten social safety while they sign deals with Boeing and Lockheed Martin. Shame!
Shame!
Why is it that universities who market themselves as places of enlightenment and change oppose students who oppose mass murder? I think it's because they have a stake in the terror. Shame!
Shame!
Take the AUKUS nuclear submarine pact, a multi-billion dollar pact to turn the Indo-Pacific into a powder keg. But to our universities, AUKUS is an opportunity to grab up weapons contracts. Shame.
Shame!
There is money to make in a world that needs engineers to refine the weapons and the missiles that are tested on Palestinians. Shame.
Shame!
The administration represses us because our voices threaten their bottom line. Shame!
Shame!
If you hate seeing power and profits come before human life, you have to get angry and you have to get organized. Individuals can't stop the missiles, but a movement of students, a movement of workers can grind this system to a halt. Be an anti-capitalist, be difficult, be a pain to your high schools and your universities, and demand with us an end to the genocide, an end to every single weapons contract on our university, an end to the AUKUS deal. Because we will not just stand by and let US hegemony and imperialism go on unchallenged. The billionaire monsters at the top of this system like to think that this world is their oyster, but it belongs to us. They can only get away with this absolute barbarity as long as we let them. One, we are the students. Two, we won't be silent. Three, stop the bombing now, 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 now. One,
we are the students.
Two,
we won't be silent.
Three,
stop the bombing now, 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 now. Woo!
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Good morning, this is Annie and Tobiah. You're on Solidarity Breakfast on 3CR, your community radio station. And on the line, we've got retired Army Major Cameron Leckie. He's from IPAN. IPAN has condemned Australia's military deployment in the Middle East. Can you give our listeners an idea about what's been offered by the Australian government to the illegal war, really, in that Israel and the US are now waging on Iran?
Good morning, Annie, and thanks for the opportunity to talk. Yes, so the Australian government has provided or has deployed a RAF, Royal Australian Air Force, wedge-tail airborne early warning surveillance aircraft, as well as provided missiles to the United Arab Emirates. It's been framed as a defensive deployment, but I think we'll find a couple of things. Firstly, the nature of that aircraft and what it can do, it won't solely be defensive. You can't really separate the two. The function of that aircraft means that, you know, it will provide support to both defensive and offensive operations. And secondly, it's probably the thin end of the wedge. I think what the government's and the messaging on the defensive deployment, I think that's mainly for our consumption. They know exactly what they're doing, but it's for the public's consumption to sort of make it sound justifiable, noting that it is an illegal war of aggression that the United States and Israel started. And it's probably going to be the thin end of the wedge. It will start with this deployment, and then we could well see more military forces be deployed over time as the situation unfolds, and for the Israelis and the Americans appears to be getting worse and worse.
And they've also sent 85 ADF personnel as well to the United Arab Emirates, which, you know, similarly to what happened in Iraq, over time Australia's connection increased and increased, didn't it?
This is Australia's history. Sort of, you look what happened in Vietnam. We start off with advisors, and then we ended up with a whole task force. You know, I think probably about 4,000 or 5,000 troops at the height of our involvement there. Same is in the Middle East. That's right. The small deployment to start, and then it always tends to get bigger. That's the historical trend. And you know, the trend is our friend here. I think that's what's likely to happen. Those people need to be deployed to keep the aircraft in the air. But what we've also done is provided a target for Iran. So if we take it from Iran's perspective and you look at how Australia has treated Iran, and regardless of what you think of the Iranian government, if you look at how the Australian government's actions towards Iran, Iran would see us as a belligerent. That's clear as day. Everything from evicting the ambassador last year and all the support that the Australian government has given to Israel and the US actions, they'll see us as a belligerent or a co-belligerent, and therefore Australian Defence Force personnel in the UAE or flying that aircraft are, from Iran's perspective, a legitimate target.
And also, of course, they are actually, we are a belligerent. Let's own up.
I agree. We have no war powers legislation in Australia, so the Prime Minister can make the decision alone and has, obviously, with Cabinet support. So the Parliament doesn't get a say, and the people certainly don't get a say. And we are so enmeshed with the Americans, you know, with Pine Gap and all the intelligence that's being provided.
And what is that, Four Eyes? Or what is it called?
Five Eyes. Through the Five Eyes intelligence network. So we're so deeply enmeshed that we have lost any capacity for independent inaction might be the case. So we're so deeply entwined. And given what happened to Gough Whitlam and in the 70s, I think that any Australian government is too scared to show any sort of degree of independence in case similar things occur to them. So we've lost our we've lost our capacity to act independently. We've been dragged along into a conflict which is likely to go for months, and you know, a tiny little, and like the way I frame it, what we've done is the worst of both worlds, because if you were going to say, oh, we're going to help the United States to win the war, well, we haven't even sent enough military capacity to make any difference, yet by doing it, we're actually signed up to the war. So we're you know, some, the worst of both situations from that perspective. And if you think about this war is going to go for months, you think about the economic impacts, which are only just starting, you know, this is probably going to be the most damaging thing to the Australian economy and society since the Second World War. The scale of the economics outfall from this, which we're only just starting to see, is going to be enormous. Yet our government seems more interested in, you know, getting involved in a war than protecting our economy and society.
How much of this is what we should come to expect of the forced posture agreement through the AUKUS deal, and how intricately tied to the US foreign policy we will be in the future?
the forced posture agreement. So, you know, I've got AUKUS and the submarines really are just up front for what it's really about, and that's US basing rights in Australia. And that's been enabled under the forced posture agreement, which basically gives the United States unimpeded access to Australian facilities, agreed facilities. I think we know what they are, but you know, all of our military facilities, port and aircrafts and that. So once again, it's another indication that we've lost our capacity for independent action. It's, you know, it's a joke to think that we could see if the United States said we're going to do this, i.e. transit military forces through Australia or actually launch attacks from Australia, as they did in Yemen. They used Australian airspace to bomb Yemen a couple of years ago with refuelers, US Air Force refuelers flying out of France. You know, it's a joke to think the Australian government is going to say, oh, no, you can't do that. So, yeah, we've surrendered our sovereignty, we can't be independent, and we are fully, because of these arrangements, and it's the same with the F-35 and how we've been providing, you know, weapon parts or parts for that aircraft, which have been used, provided directly to Israel to enable the bombing of Palestinian people in Gaza. So complicity to genocide, it's the same sort of arrangement that we're thoroughly intertwined with. And, you know, we've, essentially what it means is we've lost any capacity for independent action or thought.
And, I mean, if anybody thought we had the white hat on, now we've got the black hat on, as it were. The joint US-Australian facilities at Pine Gap and RAAF-based Tyndall are intricate in US military operations. We're actually right there in the centre of this outrageous attack on Iran.
You can't say it any clearer than that. And this is why we argue for an independent people of Australia. Part of that is removing, I mean, you can't call yourself a sovereign country when you have foreign military forces occupying your territory. And that's what US forces are. They're essentially an occupation force. They're not there for Australia's defence. They're not there for Australia's protection. They're there to enable the US to facilitate military action, to gather intelligence, and they will do that when and where they see fit. So unless and until we can remove all US military facilities from Australia, we can't consider ourselves to be a sovereign country. You know, go further, we can't even consider ourselves to be a democracy, because it doesn't matter what, you know, the mass of the people want or care for. You know, these decisions are outside of the democratic process, and ergo, we're not a democracy.
And so what's IPAN calling for, and what's the where can people find the statements that you guys are putting on, and more importantly, the events that you guys will be putting on as well?
So follow IPAN on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, at the very least, on the IPAN website. So that's Independent and Peaceful Australia Network. All the events and this press, the media release we released, will be on the website. And what we're calling for is basically to the Australian government to reverse this decision. We should be withdrawing any military support from the you know, from the Middle East, and the support to this war in West Asia, a war of aggression. And we should revert back to the United Nations Charter. The United Nations Charter makes it explicitly clear that all nations have a responsibility to address issues such as conflict through peaceful means. And there's been no evidence that I've seen whatsoever that the Australian government has done anything from a diplomatic perspective to try and end this conflict. And we do have leverage. We have this little thing called AUKUS. We could say, all right, USA, as a result of this action, we're going to withdraw from AUKUS. Or we could use that as a point of leverage. We could use a forced posture agreement as a piece of leverage. We could use military US military bases, such as Pine Gap, as leverage. But our government's complete unwillingness to do that indicates that it's been, it's basically captured by foreign forces.
Thanks for talking to us today.
No worries. Well, let's hope this war ends sooner and later, because it's unfolding as a disaster, and it's not in Australia's best interest to be supporting such a blatant, open war of aggression.
G'day, my name is Margie Thorpe. You are listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 on your dial.
Korn Karapana Jyotidis OAM overcame his traumatic childhood of racism, bullying and loneliness to help create one of Australia's largest and best-loved human rights organisations, the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, which has transformed the lives of thousands of refugees and has helped build a movement. On Sunday, March 15 in Clifton Hill, Korn will join Patrina Barson, Director of the Centre for Compassionate Society, in a conversation about compassion in action. This is a rare opportunity to hear Korn share not just about the issues facing refugees and asylum seekers, but about himself. What inspires, energises, challenges and sustains him in his work? Find out more and register through centreforcompassionatesociety.net, a 3CR supporter.
Forests are essential ecosystems, mitigating for climate breakdown, cooling the planet, and preserving the wondrous diversity of life. Yet, they are being destroyed at an alarming rate. Here in the Kulin Nations, logging continues, increasing risk of both fires and floods. The Bob Brown Foundation is calling a national day of action, the March in March for Forests. In NAM, join us on Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m. in Parliament Gardens to demand the protection for native forests. Go to marchforforests.org for all the details, including how to volunteer. March for Forests, Sunday, the 22nd of March at 11 a.m.
A 3CR supporter.
Weak solidarity, Brekkie team listener, when the merchants of death were rubbing their hands together. Thankfully, as the lovers of peace, of liberty, freedom and democracy pursue their war is peace solutions all over the world, the merchants of death are rubbing their hands together every day of every week. Rubbing their hands together as they provided the very, very expensive wherewithal for US of the UN of the US of the world, big supremo Donald Trump, or the poor, and his alleged war criminal marionette master Zion Supremo Benjamin, not another Yahoo, to continue their slaughter and destruction in evil Iran. Not that it slowed for one second, Benjamin's slaughter, destruction, genocide and starvation of the non-land, non-people of Gaza and the West Bank of Lebanon. He's right, from the river to the sea, which is not anti-Semitic when he says it. Destruction in evil Iran, whose purpose, well, we could take our pick from the sundry and very plausible justifications tossed up by Donald and his peace-loving warmongers by the day, is working a treat. Like regime change, for instance. Sure, the theocratic butcher whose death they celebrated was replaced by a theocratic butcher clone, like for like, another Donald policy triumph. Like, we've won, he gloated against the background of an oil tanker in flames. But we must finish the job, whatever that is. Although, if we've won, we might have thought the job was finished. Investigation showed the slaughter of 170-plus obviously terrorist children contributing to Donald's Peace Prize was by the US of. But Donald and his Secretary for War, for being offensive and trained killing, Pete Hug Killstuff, said evil Iran had bombed itself. A particularly plausible explanation. When that particularly plausible explanation didn't go down all that well, Donald just shrugged his shoulders with, I don't know. Why let 170-plus terrorist schoolchildren come between the greatest world leader ever and his cherished peace prize? Although it's hard to believe this most omniscient person ever has something he doesn't know. But that brilliance, unlike an equally brilliant military strategist predecessor, George W. Bush, the workers, he of mission accomplished, as accurate as we've won, means Donald can walk and chew gum at the same time. So what's next in the peace campaign? Evil Cuba, of course. The righteous crusade of the Secretary for U.S. of World State, Marco Rubalcaba, Cuba. Donald this week telling a summit of right-wing Latin Americans he called together, Communist Cuba is going to fall pretty soon, is in its last moments of life. I'll take care of Cuba and its bad regime. Knowing Donald and Pete and Mario and the team comprise a good regime. Well, the greatest regime ever. And to prove Donald correct how bad it is, Cuba's Supremo Miguel Díaz-Canel labelled Donald's summit neo-colonial. The small reactionary and neo-colonial summit in Florida, well, they could almost see evil Cuba in the distance, in Florida, commits them to accepting the lethal use of U.S. of military force to solve internal problems and to maintain order and peace in their countries. What anti-U.S. of perfidy. Any wonder the US OB is already, or while continuing, to choke evil Cuba's economy and exercising its God bless America right also to choke any country that dares defy the US OB imposed embargo. God bless America, of course, assumes naturally. The US OB represents all of North and South and Latin America, the hegemonic guardian. And after our pride that True Blue Aussie was the first US of and Zion acolyte to support the attack, True Blue Aussie says it won't get involved, and True Blue Aussie trained killers on that US of nuclear sub that torpedoed and killed off Sri Lanka, and wasn't Pete Hug Killstuff just so excited at killing all those seafarers, True Blue Aussie trained killers were not involved other than being involved. And sending air-to-air missile systems and a wedge-tail train-killer aircraft plus train killers to the Middle East is not getting involved because they are there for defensive purposes. Defense, which happens to be the title of the Being Offensive and Train Killing Department. Our train killers will not be involved in hostilities, leaving us to ponder the definition of an oxymoron. And speaking of morons, no, that's a cheap jibe. Our Minister for Being Offensive and Trained Killing, Colonel Richard Maul's the bad guys, he of the giant mind, says True Blue Aussie will spend lots and lots more on being offensive and trained killing in the budget in response to demands from the peace-loving US of. And it's not like there are non-train killing areas that could do with that money. In fact, big economic guru Jim Chalmers' capital is promising savings in those areas of waste like disability, the unemployed, pensions, health, education, transport, public transport, that is, public housing, those peripheral government concerns. Better safe and sorry. Safe but not sorry, the obvious solution to industrial nirvana, proffered by the caring business class party new industrial shadow and former special train killer Andrew Hastie to battle. We must abandon this silly renewable energy rubbish and use electricity from coal, gas and uranium to power artificial intelligence and advanced robotics. Andrew has come up with his first inspired policy on which Andrew can see no problems whatever because climate change is no problem whatever. Obviously, no matter how intelligent or unintelligent AI is or might be, it can't compete with Andrew. Fossils and nuclear waste, problem solved. He doesn't tell us where all that water's coming from, but that's because Andrew knows AI will come up with the technical solution to its own voluptuous appetite. That voluptuous appetite for power and water is clearly no problem, else our socialist governments, federal and state, would not be knocking each other over to attract the AI giants with permit fast-tracking and corporate welfare incentives, creating all those jobs, the tens and tens of jobs in the energy, water-hungry data centres, offset slightly by the thousands and thousands of jobs being lost as caring employers discover the human relations advantages of artificial rather than actual intelligence. Win-win. Unless you're one of the thousands and thousands. Indeed, New York economic titan Moore and Moore Gaines Stanley this week talked about a two-tiered reality. Presumably those getting filthy richer and those in the dole queue. Brother, can you spare a dime? In this scramble for more and more data centres and the major problems they cause for their neighbours, let's just check where they're located. Brighton, they're bound to be there. No, there's none. Toorak, no, surprise there. Camberwell, don't see any there either. Armidale, Malvern, Hawthorne. No, strange that. Seeing most of the people making massive profit from them live in those suburbs, we'd think they'd welcome them with open arms. Sharing Andrew's concern for Mother Earth, Santosas the Prophets promised us its recently opened Barossa offshore gas development, cruelly opposed for years by long-haired, commie, greenie, wooden working and iron environmentalists, and selfish terra nullius non-land, non-people Tiwi Islanders, would export out of Darwin for at least 21 years, part of the important transition from itself, and even better, would buy into the Beetaloo Basin onomatopoeic fracking plan for the Northern Territory. This is a gas resource that could be a game changer for the company, for the Northern Territory, and for true Blavosi, Santos Suprivo Kevin Galar Gurr boasted. And its scale will fulfill domestic and LNG markets here and on the East Coast for decades. What excitement. Decades of transition. Sadly, true to form, the same long-haired, commie, greeny lot of local terra nullius non-land, non-people plan to oppose this national game-changer. Vile, anti-true blue Aussie comments like, a carbon bomb. As if a responsible, good corporate citizen like Santosas the Prophets would proceed with decades of transition if it thought for one moment it would harm the environment, harm Mother Earth. Last week we commented that International Working Women's Day had been rendered benign by the establishment excising working from the title and eulogising women in really important corporate and government positions, highlighted by a Spencer Street, no longer Spencer Street, Fairfax lift out on the day. Inspiring tomorrow's female leaders, a promo for the most expensive private girls' schools, destined to set an example for working women by exploiting them, or employing them. But sad news on the working women front. Spare a thought for poor Beatrice and Eugenie. Who? They're Randy Andy's daughters. banned from joining the other royals at Ascot and the Royal Box or on carriage processions, presumably until the dust settles, which might take a while. Can't life be cruel? On Working, we've never quite determined what kinging or queening or princing or princessing involves, but it seems it's very important and onerous. Oh, and very, very well remunerated. One His Most Gracious Majesty country worker whose work we do understand, plumber Hannah Spencer, who won that by-election for the Greens when poor Nigel Farage's racist depths thought his candidate was a shoo-in. People who work hard can't afford the very basics of life, Hannah said. Instead of working for a nice life, we're working to line the pockets of billionaires. Hear, hear, we hear His Most Gracious and Beatrice and Eugenie chorusing, but how dare she bring class into class struggle when we know there's no such thing? Oh, and Nigel said her election was a victory for sectarian voting and cheating. And he's guaranteed to get sympathy from Donald, who knows what that's like. The value of an anti-corruption commission. The victims and loved ones of victims of the robo-debt scandal must be cheering and celebrating that not one person, not one, will be held responsible. Apparently, no one was to blame. Finally, as Hayseed and Sheepshit Party Supremo, little to be proud of, buggered off, his replacement, Matt Connor Can of Coal, said we need lots more True Blue Aussie jokes. And, well, Matt's certainly a good start. Good morning.
And you're with Annie and Tobiah on Solidarity Breakfast. And we're going to go to a chat I had with Naomi Kanagata. She's the CEO of the International Women's Development Agency. It's a feminist anti-colonial organisation which focuses on supporting grassroots organisations across Asia and Pacific. They maintain that the rise of authoritarianism, a threat to women's rights and the destruction of equality, is actually an indicator of the rise of unsafe societies for everyone. And this is what Naomi had to say. Just introduce yourself, Naomi. Let my listeners know a little bit about your organisation.
Of course. So my name is Naomi Kanangara. I'm the CEO of International Women's Development Agency. We are a very unique Australian institution that's been imagined by three women sitting around a kitchen table 40 years ago. We celebrated our 40th anniversary in August last year. We're still in the 40th year, continuing to celebrate. What's unique about us is we are an organization for women, by women, and we work across right now 22 women's rights organizations in the Asia Pacific, but over the 40 years of our history, over 200 women's rights organizations were supported and partnered by IWDA. And one of the key things that makes that different, Annie, from the organizations in the international development sector in Australia is that we don't see women that we work with as beneficiaries. We see them as leaders, pioneers and champions of their own development, who lead the communities, who have deep connections to the community and the countries that they work in. And we just stand with them, resource them, advocate for them, do research with them, and offer long-term partnerships. So that's us in a nutshell.
In a nutshell, yeah. And I mean, of course, it's a great big vision. One of the things that you're pointing out is that at the moment, women's rights are being rolled back across the world. And it's a danger signal for the world, in fact, when women's rights become attacked.
It's absolutely right. The kind of life that you and I live, and therefore the rights we enjoy, we often take for granted, Annie. And we forget that these rights for education, for some level of bodily autonomy, to work, to own property, all of these, none of these were handed out to women. These were generations of women who came before us fighting for them, and their results are what we are experiencing and enjoying as rights in this moment. So we need to acknowledge that it is with a lot of effort, a lot of organizing, and a lot of fight and rigor that we've come to this moment. And what we are witnessing now across the world, unfortunately, even from the previous guardians of this rise, is challenging the equality that we are that we've achieved so far, particularly with the US changing their stance on how they treat the bodily autonomy of their women in the country, and with that weaponizing the funding that they previously used to support contraception and women's rights to reproductive health, is affecting millions of women, their safety, their lives across the world. And that's just one example. And even when you look at how the safety of women, violence against women, and how the systems are not there for them to receive justice and support, this is not something that people need to be particularly reminded of on the International Women's Day, because evidence of that, talk of that, is happening. You know, we're witnessing this in real time. But International Women's Day is it's a good moment to ask ourselves, are we doing enough? Are we holding our institutions accountable? What else can we do to guard these hard-earned, much-needed rights that not only affect women, but the way that we experience the world as people in general.
You've say the organisation is challenging the overall paradigm within which women live, in the sense that you're unashamedly feminist in your approach, and this is diametrically opposed to a system that is fundamentally unsafe for women, isn't it? Right.
Absolutely right. But there is this general sense in the Australian population, when we speak to men in particular, as you know very much, younger generation of men are influenced by the manosphere, particularly supported by what is the opposition to women's rights and gender equality, the anti-rights movements are using the websites, the social media platforms to influence men and how they see women and the relationships between men and women, and adding a lot of negative connotation, as has been the case for a long period of time, as to what is sitting behind feminism. You know, feminism is about equality, fairness, justice, and it is not necessarily an ideology that women hold. It is shared, and we receive a lot of allyship and support from men and institutions and governments. So feminism is a way of looking and treating and aspiring for the world collectively, where we see justice and fairness. So, but the highly funded and fast-growing anti-rights movements that sit in behind some of the strong governments in the world as well is creating a lot of barriers at the moment for the progress we've made and where we aspire to move. So to the tune of, I think, from 2008 to 2017, the US-based anti-rights organizations have grown to the tune of $6 billion, and I'm pretty sure that it's increased by quite a number of pounds since then. So that's the kind of opposition that the women's rights organizations, whether they're based in the global north or whether they're at the grassroots where they hold the line, in the Pacific or in the Asia, the women's rights organizations face. And they are significantly underfunded, and the global cuts to women's rights programs, projects and to institutions are hitting them hard. And what we know from a recently done UN research is that if not supported, most of these organizations will be shut down within a very short time span, you know, within 6 months or so. That's the prediction. So there's quite a lot to be done to keep the grassroots voices, which is the women's rights movements, alive and thriving, because at the end of the day, this is how we've always held the institutions, the governments accountable. It's the movement that have created change, from women's voting rights to keeping us safe from workplace and general violence against women, as we saw during the Me Too movement.
So what you're talking about, when you say grassroots organisations across Pacific and Asia, You're talking about what type of organisations are you talking about?
So we're talking about often women-led, small-scale organisations that either provide services with, for example, to give you a few examples of the women's rights organization we work with across Asia and the Pacific. Some of the organizations provide shelter and support to women who have experienced violence from the community, from their family, domestic violence. Some work with men and boys in their communities to challenge harmful cultural norms, to remove barriers for women's economic participation. Some are working very hard over a number of years to elect women to political institutions, from community level to regional and district level, all the way to the national level, to the parliament. Because as you can imagine, unlike in Australia, we have gender parity in our parliament, in political forums where decisions are made about women, communities and countries. In the Pacific, it is less than 8% of women who have a seat at the table. And to get women to engage and to be present where decisions are made about them, where their rights need to be guarded, that's a long process. And that's not something that anybody can do from afar. Those voices, those messages, that energy is rising all the way from the community level to the national level, and that body of work is being carried out by small scale, grassroots, but activists with voice, with history, with connection to their communities, and who are speaking with lived experience.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. How do they find you? How do you find them?
So most of the relationships that we have are decades long, Annie. And I think the shortest relationship that we have with the 22 organizations we work with is like 10 years. And for a majority of them, we've worked for 30 plus years. Being feminist agencies, we are very relational. It's people matter, the relationship matters, how we work matter, and we are very principled and values driven, and the values we share are shared across the movement space. So IWDA count ourselves as part of the movements. We are part of the change that we are trying to support, and we understand what matters here in Australia. What happens here affect our counterparts in the Asia and the Pacific. So these commonalities, our shared way of working, our lived experiences, that's what connect us. And once those connections are made, I think all parties work hard to keep them going and sustained. So that's how we make our partnership work. Our partnerships, unlike a typical non-governmental organization in the sector, are not project-based, funding-based. They're very relational and deeply connected to our lived experiences.
Yeah, and I notice that you have four pillars, and one of them in particular is decolonization, which is very far-sighted of you, isn't it?
Oh, thanks for noticing that, Annie. Yes, decoloniality and aspiring to bring and increasingly making our development practice decolonial is byproduct of us being a feminist agency for 40 years. And I think that is the next rightful gradual step. And in our strategy that we've developed to take us to the next 10 years, we've elevated decoloniality, which has always been a part of our practice, into an organizational value. So with that comes our aspiration to make our development practice fairer, justice-based, and deeply connected to lived experiences and being led by our counterparts, who are living and doing the work for their communities and their countries.
And, of course, it's women and LGBTQ people that are actually affected by your work as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. So our work and our feminism expands to people who are living with all their diversity, so very much so.
And when you say that we're in threatening times, how would you expect listeners to be part of the positive future? How can they be helpful?
So this IWD, International Women's Day in particular, is asking to give. I mean, to me, give means to engage, to know, to be aware, to carry the voices, the messages of others to the spaces where you have influence and where you have voice, and to be aware that funding is weaponized against the gender equality movements across the world at the moment, and to put pressure, positive and negative, where necessary, to continue to keep the women's rights organizations across the world alive, for them to do their work. There's some of the ways that you can engage in the moment. More information is always in our website, and IWDA always working to link the local in Australia with the global. So we are organizing and working with the movement, the growing gender equality movement in Australia as well. So there are opportunities for you to, through our website, to know what's happening and to be a part of that, and to receive information regularly, or to visit us and see what's happening, and to be a part of the global movement that's shaping up.
Thanks for talking to me.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Annie.
Hi, I'm Ahmed from Fidro Primary School, and you're listening to Community Radio on 3CR.
And you're back. We're coming up to the end of Solidarity Breakfast this morning, Tobias.
Yeah, and just a reminder, this will be the last one for any Italian listeners, that your voting cards will have come this week. And if they haven't, that you can see the you can go to the Italian consulate and request it and submit it also at the consulate, because the voting, the last day is the 19th, so it is absolutely crucial that you vote no in this referendum.
Yep, okay. And before we do close off the program, I got a little snippet from this week's Talk Back with Attitude, it becomes self-evident why I put it on this morning. It's a chat with Bree, who is from the No Duck and Quail Shooting Alliance.
Good morning, Bree.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Not too bad.
Yeah, so you've got something to tell us about the End the Duck and Quail Shooting.
The duck shooting begins next Wednesday at 8 a.m. And quail shooting begins on the 8th of April, but the season goes a bit longer. And I just wanted to have a chat with you guys about how disgusting it is that the government has still not banned it after the parliamentary inquiry in 2023, which mm-hmm. recommended that it be banned. They spent millions of dollars, as they do, doing an inquiry and then went against their own findings. And we are also having a vigil at Parliament House next Wednesday at 8 a.m. as shooting begins on the wetlands. So if anyone who's listening wants to come along, that would be great.
Yeah, they need to see that people aren't real keen on this idea.
Yeah, so we just wanted also to bring the campaign into the city because, you know, going to the wetlands is really traumatic and horrible. Mm. And I'm actually taking a year off because I just needed emotionally a year off watching men run around with shotguns laughing at shooting animals mm-hmm. and
no
threatening us.
There's no respect in it, is there? Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's 8 a.m. next Wednesday, and obviously...
Well, we're meeting at 7:45. The shooting starts at 8, so we want to be there because both houses of Parliament are sitting. Mm-hmm. So, we just want to be there. And
you're inviting all our listeners who are interested to come?
Anyone who's opposed to duck shooting and wants to come and show the government that they haven't forgotten. Because mm-hmm. I think... after the parliamentary inquiry, a lot of people actually seem to think it did get banned because that would have been the logical step mm-hmm. after the inquiry recommended it. Mm. And, we're bringing the campaign back to the streets is what's happening.
Now, you said you were there last year and you were traumatised. Do you want to discuss that? Because I don't think people understand how difficult it is for people who go out to try to... you know, be witnesses as to what's happening.
Yeah, so I went out, I've been out for the last few years, since I think 2018. And the authorities have come down a lot heavier on the rescuers recently. Like, they seem to be hell bent on making sure they don't do anything to stop the shooting or to recover any wounded birds. So I guess. I mean, last year particularly, I got there at opening, so 8 a.m. on that first day, and we were actually trying to be undercover just to get some footage, because if we can get footage, there's a lot of illegal stuff that goes on. There's all these rules around what they're allowed to do, like they've got to retrieve each bird before they shoot another one, and they've got to kill them before they shoot another one, and they're only allowed to shoot certain species. And we were trying to be undercover, and were sent to a separate wetland, and the first thing we saw was a swan come down in front of us, which you're not allowed to shoot swans, and they're huge, so it's quite an impact, but they weren't dead. And so we were all in camo and stuff, and we all dropped out we dropped our disguises pretty quickly because we just wanted to help this swan get them to a vet, because usually if we can catch the wounded, they are... too far gone to survive and usually get euthanized. It's the ones that we can't catch that are wounded that might survive, but we can't catch them because they're okay enough to, like, sometimes they can still fly or they can duck under the water and, you know, then you can't see them because they swim off and you'll spend an hour trying to catch, like, one bird to try to get them to a vet. And, yeah, it's horrible. Like, we couldn't catch that swan. And so for the whole season after that, at that wetland, like, I was always looking for that swan just because I knew that they were out there alive and suffering. I mean, they might not, but they won't still be alive now, obviously. But,
Well, look, on
behalf and it was just horrendous. We brought in, like, 200 birds from that wetland. And also just the men, so 90% of firearms licenses go to men, and 98% of duck shooters are men. So it's a very male, heavy, violent thing that's happening, and most of the rescuers are women. So, yeah, it's an interesting place to be. Like, we get a lot of threats of violence and, you know, people point shotguns at you. Yeah, it's just, it's, that part of it's not the most distressing part. It's watching animals suffer, obviously, but also having no support from the authorities that are there. They are very much on the side of the shooters, and they just want to find us. Like, I have ongoing court issues from being at the wetlands in 2024. So, anyway.
Well, look, we encourage our listeners to come and join you at 7:45 on the steps of the Victorian Parliament House next Wednesday, which will be the 18th of March.
18th, yeah.
All right. All the best, and congratulations on your bravery and the work you do.
Such courage.
Thank you. Yeah. I'd love to see you guys there too.
Yeah. You never know.
You never know.
You never know.
All the best.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
That's all right.
Thanks a lot, Bri.
Have a nice day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
If you will, the picture of you and I engaged in a kiss. The sweat of your body covers me. Come on, darling, can you picture this?
If you will,
a courtyard, an ocean of violet so blue. Animals strike curious poses. They feel the heat between me and you.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.